This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Diablo Mesa, written by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child, read by Cynthia Farrell. To Montague Rhodes James, O.M., in appreciation. Quis est iste qui venit? 1. Dr. Marcel Weingrau, president of the Santa Fe Archaeological Institute, slowly unfolded her hands on the glossy expanse of desk in front of her. Then, equally slowly, she reached for a slim manila folder, which she pulled close with exquisitely manicured nails. Even Weingrau's simplest movements, Nora Kelly noted, had the appearance of being premeditated. But she'd grown used to this since Weingrau had accepted the presidency, and knew it was neither a signal of encouragement nor one of alarm, necessarily. Now Weingrau gave Nora a broad, warm smile. "The reason I asked you here this morning," she said, "is because of an opportunity that has come our way. A wonderful new project. Extraordinary, really. Connor and I would like you to direct it." Nora felt a flood of relief. She wasn't sure why she had been summoned to the president's office that morning. Ever since she'd been passed over for a promised promotion in October in favor of Connor Digby, who was seated nearby, she and Weingrau had maintained a formal, carefully calibrated relationship. Nora and Digby shared adjacent offices, and while he was a good archaeologist as well as a friendly, if unremarkable, fellow, her relationship with this unexpected new boss had been awkward. In the 6 months since his promotion, she'd kept her head down and focused on her work, trying and failing to get over a sense of betrayal and resentment.
"Not to bring up an uncomfortable subject," Weingrau went on, "but I know you were disappointed not to get the chief of archaeology position. You've done excellent work for the Institute and brought us some welcome publicity. In fact, this new project is a direct result of that." She tapped the folder 3 times with a red fingernail.
"Thank you," said Nora.
"This project is a little different, perhaps, than what we normally undertake, although well within our archaeological mission." Nora waited to hear more. Weingrau's mix of words, complimentary and chipper, was uncharacteristic. "Your work in locating and recovering the Victoria Peak treasure attracted the attention of a well-known businessman, and potential donor, I might add, who is the motivating force behind this exciting project." At this, Nora felt a faint stirring of unease. Why was Weingrau laying it on so thick?
"His name is Tappan, Lucas Tappan. Perhaps you've heard of him?"
Nora paused.
"The private space company guy, Icarus? That person?"
"Exactly. Tappan is best known as founder of Icarus Space Systems, but his major interests lie in wind power. The space thing is a bit of a side effort. All worthy businesses, I might add. And he's a man of means."
Another broad smile. Nora nodded.
He wasn't just a man of means. He was a billionaire. "Mr. Tappan has brought us not only a very intriguing proposal, but a grant to go with it. Connor and I have discussed it, and we've gotten approval from the executive committee of the board."
Nora found herself growing more uneasy. Normally, the board of the Institute did not get involved in project approvals. And why hadn't she heard anything about this before?
"I'm going to let Connor fill you in on the details," the president said.
Right.
Digby turned toward Nora. He was considerably more nervous than the cool Weingrau.
Are you familiar with the Roswell site?
Nora wasn't sure she'd heard correctly. She stared at Digby.
The Roswell site, he repeated. It's located in the remote desert, north of...
Do you mean the place where the supposed UFO crashed? Nora interrupted.
Yes, exactly,
said Digby, charging ahead before Nora could respond.
To recap, in 1947, the foreman of a ranch northeast of Roswell, New Mexico, found the wreckage of something unusual on a section of BLM land leased by the ranch. The military went out to investigate and, on July 8th, issued a press release stating the 509th Composite Group had found the wreckage of a flying disc. 2 hours later, the announcement was quickly amended to say it was a weather balloon that had crashed. It was only years later that investigators began to uncover the truth, that a UFO, apparently monitoring U.S. nuclear tests, had been struck by lightning and crashed. The government had recovered the remains of the spacecraft, and possibly the remains of several aliens. All this was followed by a massive government cover-up.
He said all this in a rush, then stopped. Nora continued to stare at Digby. Why would he call this wacko theory the truth?
Mr. Tappan has brought us a proposal, well prepared and fully funded, to excavate the Roswell site. A professional archaeological dig done by the book.
And this is the wonderful new project you want me to direct. He gave her a nervous smile.
Exactly. With all the staff, equipment, and money you require to do an excavation to the highest professional standards.
When Nora continued to stare at him, he fell into a nervous silence, taking a pencil from his shirt pocket and starting to fiddle with it. Nora finally turned to Weingrau.
Is this some kind of joke?
Not at all, she said. The project's been thoroughly vetted and board approved. Something crashed there. What, we don't really know.
You've got to be kidding.
Please don't jump to conclusions, Nora. We're not endorsing any UFO theory. What we've agreed to is a professional excavation of the crash site. That's it.
With all due respect, Dr. Weingrau, by even agreeing to this, you're endorsing it.
I mean, that UFO incident was debunked years ago.
Reasonable people disagree. Nobody knows for sure. As Connor mentioned, there is evidence of a government cover-up. Mr. Tappan has done considerable research into the incident, and he's come upon new information confirming that alien technology was recovered from the area, possibly even remains.
As in alien bodies? I'm sorry, but do you really mean to involve the Institute in something as tacky as this?
We already have, said Weingrau, her voice taking on an edge. This is a done deal, and I take exception to your characterization. I've been patient with you, Nora. Very patient, even as you continue to work on the Tsongkhawi project, long past the expected deadline, with no end in sight.
Nora could hardly believe what she was hearing.
I imagine that, in addition to funding the dig, Tappan has promised the Institute a wad of cash, right? While a generous donation is involved, that's not why we're doing it. This is a genuine, unsolved mystery. If we can shed light on it with archaeological science, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm giving you a wonderful opportunity to polish your CV and raise your profile.
Forget it, said Nora before she could stop herself. Denying the existence of things beyond our knowledge is as dangerous as promoting them. Nora tried for a moment to think about it from the president's perspective, but she couldn't quite get there.
I'm sorry, but I won't do it. I couldn't do it.
Weingrau stared at her.
Perhaps I gave you the wrong impression.
We're not asking for your approval. The project has been accepted, and you're going to direct it. Period.
This isn't right, said Nora, getting control of her anger and lowering her voice. I wasn't consulted while all this was being decided, and by rights, I should have been.
I'm in the middle of an important project right now, delayed through no fault of my own by that business with Victorio Peak. You can't dump something like this on me with no notice. The fact is, you haven't been treating me with the professionalism I deserve since you came here. And this is just another example. It'll make the Institute the laughingstock of the archaeological community. It won't raise my profile. It'll endanger my career. I decline to participate.
You heard Dr. Weingrau, Digby piped up shrilly. It's already been decided.
She fixed a cool eye on him before looking back at Weingrau. This demand, on top of everything else, was the last straw.
Here's an idea. Get your toady to direct it.
That's not only uncalled for, it's offensive.
You're probably right. So let Digby speak for himself.
She turned to him.
Why don't you direct the excavation, Connor?
Because, he stammered, Mr. Tappan mentioned you specifically.
Is that right? Nora said coolly. Well, please tell Tappan I'm not available.
A tense silence developed in the office. Finally, Weingrau said,
Is that your final word, Nora?
Yes, it is.
Then I suggest you go back to your office, gather your personal effects, put your files in order, and take your leave of the Institute.
Nora took a deep breath. This abrupt airing of her grievances, tumbling as it had from her lips, was almost as unexpected to her as it must have been to Weingrau. But it was now said, and maybe for the better. The fact was, being honest with herself, for some time now she'd been practically looking for an excuse to leave. And here it was, gift-wrapped. If the Institute wanted to ruin its reputation, at least she wouldn't be around to catch the blowback.
In other words, you're firing me, she said.
If you drop off a letter of resignation on your way out, we won't have to term it a dismissal. We'll call it a resignation.
No.
No what?
If you're going to fire me, fire me.
She turned to Digby.
Good luck. You're going to need it.
And with that, she stood up and left the office. 2. 90 minutes later, Nora exited the main door of the Institute into the bright April sunlight, carrying a box and a backpack toward her car. Her rage was starting to cool, replaced by bitter regret and second-guessing. If she'd handled the situation differently, if she hadn't pushed back so hard, if she'd only said she needed to give it some thought, if she hadn't called the project tacky or Digby a toady, maybe she could have talked her way out of it and sloughed the excavation off on him. Beyond that was the sheer stubbornness that kept her from taking the resignation offer. It was going to be hard enough to find another position in the current academic job market, but with a dismissal on her record, what was she thinking? And yet the thought of submitting a resignation letter now, after all she'd said, was just too much humiliation for her to bear. And she couldn't help but worry about her brother, Skip, who also worked at the Institute. He was likely to quit in a huff as soon as he heard she was fired. He was in a tougher position than she. He hadn't exactly put his Stanford physics degree to good use. How many collections manager positions were there in Santa Fe? But even if he didn't quit, Weingrau might fire him just to spite her. Nora didn't want to see him spiraling back down to the dark place he'd been in a few years before. A vehicle was idling in the parking lot, blocking the way to her car. As she walked around it, wrestling with her stuff, a man got out.
Dr. Kelly?
She stopped.
Yes?
Could we have a moment to chat?
I'm sorry, she said. I'm really busy and I've got to go.
Whatever he wanted, whatever he was doing here at the Institute, was no longer of interest to her. She resumed her walk.
Here, let me help you with the box,
he said, hurrying over.
No thanks, she said sharply.
She arrived at her car, fumbled out the key, unlocked the doors, and threw the box in the back seat, tossing the backpack in after it. She slammed the door and realized the man had come up and was standing behind her. She ignored him, opening the driver's door and getting in. He placed a hand on it, preventing her from shutting it in his face.
I take it you quit?
He said. She stared, momentarily flummoxed. Had word gotten around already? Nobody knew that, not even Skip.
Who the hell are you? She asked.
He smiled.
Lucas Tappan.
He held out his hand. She stared at him, really seeing him for the first time. He was around her age, mid to late 30s, in a linen jacket, black lambskin cowboy shirt, jeans, suede Lanvin sneakers, with curly black hair, gray eyes, white teeth, cleft chin, dimples. She immediately disliked him and his smug, I've got unlimited money, but it hasn't really changed me look.
Get your hand off my door, or I'll call the police.
He complied, and she slammed it and shoved the key into the ignition. The engine started, and she twisted around to back up, pressing the accelerator harder than she intended and spinning the wheels in the gravel.
I'm glad you quit,
he said, raising his voice to be heard through the window.
Now we can work free of encumbrance.
She jammed on the brakes, rolled down the window.
What?
I was hoping this might happen. Frankly, I wasn't looking forward to working with that Weingrau lady.
You were hoping? This is ridiculous.
Look, can we talk? Just for a moment.
Nora stared at him.
I really don't have time for this.
You have all the time in the world. You don't have a job.
Thanks for that. You're an asshole, you know? And you're crazy. UFOs? Roswell? What a crock!
All her anger spilled out.
Okay, fine. I've been told all that before and worse. 5 minutes, please.
She was about to drive off, but then stopped. All of a sudden, she felt herself deflate, as if her energy had escaped along with her anger. Had the last 2 hours really happened? Earlier that morning, she'd been in her office, working on one of the final Sankawi write-ups. And now she had no office, no job, only a couple of burned bridges still smoking in her rearview mirror.
Oh, for Christ's sake! 5 minutes, then.
She waited behind the wheel, crossing her arms.
Do you think maybe we could not have this conversation through a car window? I want to show you something.
Against her better judgment, Nora eased the car back into the parking space and got out, then followed Tappan to what was obviously his vehicle. An ice blue Tesla. Of course.
Would you mind getting into the passenger seat?
She did as he requested, sliding onto the buttery white leather. The dashboard gleamed with burl wood, satin nickel, and a large computer screen. She shut the door. The man pushed a button, and the windows magically darkened. He reached under the dash and removed a large rolled-up document, which he proceeded to unfurl.
Take a look.
He held it open so she could see. Nora immediately recognized it.
It's a ground-penetrating radar survey,
he began.
I know what it is, said Nora impatiently.
Good. Now, do you see this area here? This is our target area, where the UFO is said to have crashed. What do you see?
Nora looked closer at the grayscale image. It was clear, right off the bat, that something had happened there.
You tell me. Is that disturbance consistent with the crash of a weather balloon?
She looked still more closely. She could see, just barely, a blurry but deep-looking furrow or groove in the sand, along with other evidence of extensive and widespread disturbance.
Not really, she replied. That's right. And look how it's surrounded by old traces of earth-moving equipment and vehicles. The GPR also revealed two faint roads leading from the area, and another one circling around it. At one time, this was a heavily trafficked place. Suggestive, don't you think?
Isn't this kind of small for a UFO? I mean, that groove isn't very wide. And it could be anything. A missile, small plane, even a meteorite. I don't see evidence it was a UFO.
The point is, said Tappan, that something happened here totally inconsistent with a balloon or nuclear monitoring device crash. And then you can see where topsoil, here and here, was moved to bury the target area and cover up all these tracks, and smoothed over. Why would they have gone to so much trouble to cover up a balloon crash? That's a lot of earth moving.
She scrutinized the survey more closely in the confines of the car. There were signs of a lot of old activity extending from the target area. Tappan smiled. He took out another chart and unrolled it. This was obviously a magnetometer survey, a tool archaeologists use to record the magnetic properties of soil for mapping subsurface terrain. There were various anomalies and dark spots in and around the target area. The disturbed area with its faint furrow was also vaguely delineated.
All those dark spots and smudges are what we laymen would call buried stuff, said Tappan. Stuff that your excavation will unearth.
It could be anything, Nora said. Rocks, tin cans, trash.
Tappan tapped the charts with a finger.
Maybe so. But this proves one thing. The government lied. There was no weather balloon or secret nuclear surveillance device. Why would they lie?
He stared at her with gray, searching eyes. It was a fair question.
And the lying goes on, Tappan said. A few years ago, the government allegedly declassified its files on UFOs. There was some startling stuff in there, as you probably know. Videos of objects taken by fighter pilots and so forth. But even earlier, they had released documents indicating the Roswell crash was not a weather balloon, but a classified government device developed at Los Alamos for detecting above-ground nuclear blasts. It was being tested, but got away in high winds and crashed at the Roswell site. The disc that witnesses described was actually a radar reflector, used for tracking purposes.
Sounds reasonable, she said. That might explain the furrow. The thing getting dragged along the ground, perhaps.
The furrow is at least 15 feet deep. No, the nuclear device with a radar detector attached was also misinformation. A second layer of it. First a weather balloon, then a secret surveillance device. All disinformation. Nothing to see here, folks. The real Roswell files, and the artifacts and debris they found at the site, remained secret.
She shook her head.
And the alien bodies? She asked sarcastically.
He smiled.
Look, the point is, there's more to be found at the crash site. You can see it in these two surveys. A professional archaeological excavation would reveal what exactly? Not only a ground disturbance, but something more. Perhaps much more.
He rolled up the maps.
What do you say, Nora?
Are these charts all you've got?
All? I think it's quite a lot. Look, I didn't want the Institute. I wanted you. I thought you'd probably quit when you heard the proposal, and I was right.
You were wrong. I was fired. He chuckled.
Now that I've met you, I can see how that might have happened. Digby, that poor homunculus.
He shook his head sadly.
Have you really been reporting to him these last 6 months?
Nora deflected the question.
Why me? She asked. There's plenty of archaeologists out there.
I followed the Victorio Peak treasure story with great interest. And then I acquainted myself with the work you did at Donner Pass. And before that, the Kavira site. I don't want some slope-shouldered academic. You've got all the qualities I need. Courage. Ability. Perseverance. Judgment. I built my business by finding the right people.
She watched almost with regret as he snapped rubber bands back on the charts and put them away.
I'm sorry, she said. I can't do this. I just can't.
I'm not asking you to make a decision now. All I'm asking is that you come and see the site for yourself. Meet the team. Look at the evidence. The site is on Bureau of Land Management property. I've got all the federal permits, equipment, engineers, a couple of semi-domesticated postdocs, everything necessary for a first-class excavation. All I need is a credentialed archaeologist. I'm offering a good salary.
She shook her head.
My chopper is waiting at Sunport Aviation. We can be at the site in just over an hour, and you'll be home by 6. Or if you decide to stay, you'll have a custom Airstream to yourself for the night.
She sighed. The good salary part, at least, was tempting. She and Skip shared a house, and they were always scrambling to pay the mortgage. Santa Fe was an expensive town, and the Institute was not exactly generous.
I'm very sorry, she said,
opening the door and getting out. She turned to see Tappan looking back at her with surprise and dismay. He clearly wasn't used to having people turn him down.
Thank you for the offer, but I'm afraid I have to decline.
She closed the door and went back to her car, wondering as she did so if she'd just made the worst mistake of her life. 3. Nora arrived home at their small house on the south side of town. She dropped her box of stuff on the kitchen counter, tossed the backpack in the corner, put the pot on for coffee, and flopped down in a chair. Mitty, their golden retriever rescue, came rushing over, wagging his tail so hard his entire back end was swaying. He pushed his nose into her hand. She petted him absentmindedly, wondering what the hell she was going to do now. It was 1 o'clock, and the day stretched ahead endlessly. Maybe she should start sending out CVs.
Nora, you're home!
She just about jumped up as Skip came rushing in.
So are you, she said. Why aren't you at the Institute?
She had a sudden fear that Weingrau had fired him, too.
I quit!
Oh, God, no. She tried to keep the dismay out of her voice.
You quit? Why?
I got a new job.
The kettle started whistling.
I'll make the coffee for us, Skip said, and tell you all about it.
He busied himself with the grinding and filter while Nora absorbed this new information. Skip? What better job could he possibly have gotten?
So, what are you doing home?
Skip asked, spooning grounds and then pouring water into the French press.
I was fired.
Skip halted.
What?
Fired.
What do you mean, fired? You're their star archaeologist.
Nora sighed.
They asked me to dig up a UFO. I said no.
That was followed by a sudden silence. Skip went back to pouring the water.
A UFO?
he repeated feebly. You know that crazy Roswell conspiracy theory about a UFO crash and dead aliens? They actually wanted me to direct an excavation of the site. I told them I didn't want to become the laughingstock of the archaeological world. One thing led to another, and Weingrau fired me.
Skip fussed with the French press. The silence stretched on. Nora began to feel a creeping feeling of unease.
Skip?
Yes?
Tell me about your new job.
Another long silence.
Why do you think the Roswell story is so crazy? I mean, there's a lot of evidence supporting it. A lot. There are witnesses, there are documents. Retired military officers have come forward and said they were there, that they saw the wreckage, even saw the alien remains.
Skip, by any chance is your new job working for a guy named Tappan?
He came over with two coffees, set them down defiantly on the table, and took a seat.
As a matter of fact, yes.
She shook her head. This day was just getting worse and worse.
Nora, will you listen to me for a moment? First of all, Tappan's done a huge amount of research. This is a serious effort. Nothing flaky about it. He's already done magnetometer, LIDAR, and ground-penetrating radar surveys. He's got all the permits, everything.
How much is he paying you?
$1,600 a week.
Is that all?
Hey, cut the sarcasm. This is a fantastic project and a great opportunity. It's going to blow the lid off the biggest government cover-up of all time. Look, I've been interested in the Roswell incident and UFOs for years. You know that.
He paused.
I can't believe you turned down the opportunity and got yourself fired. What the hell?
Nora took a sip of coffee and tried to organize her thoughts.
When did he hire you?
At noon today. He just walked into my office at the Institute, introduced himself, told me what he was doing, and asked me to join the team. He already had a letter of employment printed. I signed it, wrote my resignation, and dropped it off on my way out.
That must have been right before she ran into Tappan in the parking lot. At least the man hadn't gone to Skip after she said no. She sighed. It was just like Skip to rush headlong into something, get in over his head, and then go down in flames. Before he'd gotten the job at the Institute, she couldn't even count the number of jobs he'd been fired from. How were they going to pay the mortgage?
The guy's a billionaire, Nora. He owns that space company, Icarus. He's a green energy guy, too, building giant wind turbines and solar power plants. He's the real deal.
I ran into him in the parking lot after I was fired. He offered me the job again. I said no.
Skip seized his hair with both hands in horror and rocked back and forth in his chair.
You said no twice?
Mitty began barking.
I can't put digging up UFOs on my resume. It's too weird.
There's nothing weird about a serious, professional excavation of that site, said Skip. We could have been working together. It would have been so much fun.
He pulled out his cell phone.
I'm calling Tappan right now and telling him you've changed your mind.
He started punching in a number, but Nora stayed his hand.
No, please.
At that moment, her own cell phone rang. Relieved to get out of the conversation with Skip, she answered it, only to find Tappan on the other end.
Nora, am I disturbing you?
She almost answered in the affirmative, then thought of Skip.
Can you hold the line a moment while I go somewhere private? She asked.
Skip, immediately guessing who was on the phone, leapt up and started dancing around her, gesturing.
She quickly walked into her bedroom and shut the door in his face. "Okay," she said.
"I wanted to apologize for ambushing you in the parking lot. I fear I didn't give you enough breathing room to really consider my proposal."
"You hired my brother."
"His primary job will be working with our astronomer and artifact curator, Noam Bitton, taking care of his library and the collection. He majored in physics, seems to know a great deal about the Roswell incident, and has the requisite collections management background. Apparently, he also has a lot of experience assisting at a dig site, thanks to time spent with you, no doubt."
"You hired him to get to me."
"Not at all. We're very glad to have him. Nora, here's the reason for my call. I'll be flying Skip out to the site tomorrow morning to introduce him around, show him his new quarters. Why don't you come? No obligation. You can meet the team, see what we're doing, and get a sense of how Skip will fit in."
"It feels a little like blackmail, you hiring Skip."
"Nora, I know how close you are to your brother, and I know..."
He hesitated.
"I know you experienced a great loss. I just wanted to create as welcoming and comfortable an environment for you as I could. I'll be sending a car to your house to pick up Skip tomorrow at 9. Would you care to join him?"
4. Nora hadn't spent much time in helicopters, but she could tell that Tappan's was more like a private jet, or maybe even a luxury yacht, with its plush carpeting, leather, and gleaming mahogany trim. Two rows of seats faced each other, with Skip and Nora on one side, and Tappan opposite. Skip was enthused that she'd agreed to come along, and almost beside himself with excitement. During the ride, Tappan was curiously quiet, spending most of the time reading a novel. Skip, on the other hand, talked almost nonstop about the Roswell incident, UFOs, aliens, SETI, and the Drake equation. Nora was surprised at how much he knew. As he'd said, he'd always been interested in UFOs, but she hadn't realized to what extent. Tappan closed his book.
"We're approaching the site," he said. "A look out the window will give you a good overview."
Nora turned, grateful for the interruption in Skip's enthused outpouring. The helicopter was flying over a landscape of broad desert mesas and high plains, cut by sinuous threads of arroyos and canyons, with sprinklings of pinyon and juniper. In the distance, she could see a large, dry lake bed, all white, with dust devils crossing it. Coming into view on a low tableland, she saw what looked at first like a small town, but as they grew closer, it resolved itself into a camp, with trailers, motorhomes, a row of Quonset huts, two large prefab sheds, a dirt parking area full of cars and heavy equipment, and a brand new cement helipad, all serviced by an equally new dirt road winding off toward a line of distant hills.
"Quite a setup," Nora said.
"I think if you choose to take the assignment, you'll find it comfortable. We're too far out in the middle of nowhere to commute, so staff will be living on site."
The chopper came in for a landing, circling as a flight line worker motioned them in with day-glow batons. A moment later, they had eased onto the helipad and were powering down, and soon the doors opened. Nora followed Tappan out with Skip, and they scooted away from the rotors toward a waiting jeep. Tappan turned to Nora.
"Tour first, or a review of the project plan?"
"Project plan, please," said Nora. If she didn't like the plan, and she wouldn't, there was no point in a tour.
"I figured as much."
He turned to the driver.
"Quonset 1.
He turned back to Nora.
"I'm going to introduce you to the three engineers."
The jeep drove through a neighborhood of Airstreams and Class A RVs to a row of Quonset huts, each one labeled with a number. They halted in front of number 1, and Nora and Skip followed Tappan inside. Passing several cubicles, they emerged into a large open space with a long work table. Three people in white lab coats, two men and a woman, were standing behind it. Evidently, they'd been awaiting their arrival. On the table before them were some large, rolled-up documents.
"Ladies and gentlemen," said Tappan, "I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Nora Kelly and Mr. Elwyn Kelly."
"God, no,"
Nora's brother interrupted.
"Call me Skip, please."
She suppressed a smile. Skip loathed his given name.
"Skip it is, then. We're all on a first-name basis here, anyway. Skip is Gnome's new research assistant, and Nora is, I hope, going to be our chief archaeologist."
Tappan paused, then said,
"Perhaps you'd introduce yourselves and your specialties? Nora, by the way, has a doctorate from Stanford, and has worked at both the New York Museum of Natural History and the Santa Fe Archaeological Institute. A very impressive resume."
The three glanced at one another and greeted her with nervous smiles. Nora had a feeling the trio had been pulled together very recently and were still unsure of their roles. The three engineers, indeed. They did look sort of goofy and mismatched, with a short, dark fire plug guy, a tall, skinny, pale woman, and a black man of in-between height with a bald head, full beard, and thick glasses. All three gloriously and reassuringly nerdy.
"Vitali, you first,"
Tappan said.
"Tell us about your background."
"Vitali Kuznetsov,"
the short young man said with a hesitant nod.
"LIDAR mapping engineer. MS from the University of Houston, National Center for Airborne Laser Mapping." "Cecilia?"
"Cecilia Toth,"
said the young woman, brushing back a mass of curly red hair with her hand.
"Geophysics engineer, specializing in ground-penetrating and synthetic aperture radar and magnetometer analysis. PhD from Texas A&M.
"Greg Banks,"
said the man with the beard and shaved head.
"PhD from Imperial College, London. Postdoc in planetary geology and exobiology."
He had a British accent.
"Good to meet you,"
said Nora. Tappan had obviously managed to assemble a high-powered group. But then he had billions to spend. Nothing like the usual academic penuriousness she was so familiar with. She couldn't help but wonder what it would be like to work with an unlimited budget for a change.
"Thank you," said Tappan. "Nora, you've already seen some of this, but these charts are at much higher resolution. Vitali?"
Kuznetsov unrolled a large sheet. Peering at it, Nora saw it was a grayscale 3D view of the site, mapped using LIDAR.
"You're familiar with LIDAR?"
Kuznetsov asked.
"Ground mapping with infrared lasers?"
Nora nodded. The chart was of the entire mesa top and surrounding areas, beautifully done, showing almost unbelievable topographical detail down to the bunches of grass and cacti. Skip gave a low whistle.
"Resolution is less than a centimeter," said Kuznetsov. "We mapped to a radius of a mile out, just to make sure we didn't miss anything."
He pointed at the center of the survey.
"As you can clearly see, the target area shows historic disturbance of an undetermined nature, surrounded by old tracks of earth-moving equipment and vehicles. A whole lot of activity, a long time ago. A great deal of topsoil was moved around to bury the target area. You can see it's higher than the surrounding terrain."
Nora nodded. It was weak evidence for a UFO crash, but she said nothing.
"Thank you, Vitali," said Tappan. "Cecilia?"
The tall woman with the tumble of red hair gave Nora a smile, then unrolled a vividly colored display.
"What we have here," she said, is a ground-penetrating radar map of the site and environs. We're lucky it's mostly dry sand, because radar penetrates such material very well, up to 3 meters.
Nora stared at the image. This was one Tappan had showed her yesterday, but larger and higher resolution. The V-shaped furrow in the ground was clearly visible, and Nora had to admit it looked like a crash signature.
When was this survey done?
Nora asked.
About 2 weeks ago, said Toph. This is the combined data from an overflight of a helicopter carrying SAR, digitally merged with a GPR system deployed at ground level.
Tappan spoke.
Whatever made that long gouge came in fast at an oblique angle. This was no balloon payload. It was moving.
I see that, said Nora.
But it's still not proof it was a UFO.
UAP, said Toth. Unidentified aerial phenomena. That's what the DOD is calling them these days. Less stigma. Anyway, take a look at this.
Toth unrolled another chart. Nora immediately recognized it as a magnetometer survey, recording the magnetic properties of the soil. Once again, she could see that the ground was peppered with various anomalies and dark spots, indicating the presence of objects or possible artifacts. The groove was, again, vaguely outlined.
Alien artifacts, possibly,
murmured Skip with ill-suppressed excitement. Nora stared at the image. There were indeed things down there. She found herself intrigued, despite all her misgivings.
Greg is our team exobiologist, a specialist in what alien biochemistry might look like and what exotic materials they might have used to build their spacecraft.
Tappan sounded like a proud father. Banks nodded.
So that's where we are, Tappan concluded. All we need now is to break ground and see what's down there. How about it, Nora?
Nora refrained from answering. She was still looking at the large magnetometer chart.
What's this?
She pointed to a small, very faint rectangle visible near the edge.
That's 500 yards from the target site, said Tappan. We haven't analyzed or processed it at high res. Do you think it might be important?
A magnifying glass was at hand, and Nora picked it up to examine the images and the magnetometer survey.
Are there any prehistoric Indian ruins in the vicinity?
The three engineers looked at each other, then shrugged.
There's nothing around except the old Pershing Proving Range, 15 miles north in the Los Fuertes Mountains, and mothballed decades ago,
Tappan said.
Why do you ask?
Because that image looks like it might be a burial.
An Indian burial?
Yes, it should be investigated. If it is a prehistoric burial, or in fact any kind of burial, there are laws against disturbing it in any way, and we'd have to rope it off.
We'll have to look into that,
Tappan said.
But now, I want to introduce you to our in-house astronomer and extraterrestrial specialist, Noam Bitton. He's in Quonset too.
He thanked the three engineers, who said an effusive goodbye to Nora.
They think I'm going to be their boss, Nora mused as they departed, Skip following.
She had to admit she was intrigued. This was more, in every sense, than she had expected. On the other hand, she couldn't imagine any way this project could positively impact her overall career.
Noam Bitton. The name seemed vaguely familiar.
Tappan led them into the adjoining hut and down the narrow central hallway to a door on the right. He tried the handle, but it was locked.
Noam, he called out, knocking. I'm tied up,
came an irritated voice.
I'm showing Dr. Nora Kelly around, the archaeologist I'm hoping will direct the excavation, and her brother, who will be our librarian and collections manager. Fine and dandy, the voice replied,
with a marked Hebrew accent.
Bring them back in an hour.
Tappan rolled his eyes at Nora and said, sotto voce,
Gnome's a bit eccentric.
Then, in a normal tone,
Gnome, we're on a tight schedule. If you don't mind...
With a grumbling sound, the door opened. A man stood inside with a scruffy beard and unkempt brown hair, an irritated look on his face. Nora would have guessed him close to 50 years of age.
May we come in?
Tappan asked, a slight ironic edge to his voice.
Sure.
The man glanced at Nora with a quick smile.
Hi.
Then he cast a critical eye on Skip and merely grunted. He led them into a capacious office, surprisingly neat given his disheveled appearance. He sat down at his desk without offering anyone a chair. Tappan guided Nora and Skip to seats opposite the desk, then sat down himself.
Gnome was formerly chairman of the Science Advisory Board of SETI,
said Tappan,
and a professor of astronomy at the Wiseman Institute of Science in Israel.
Nora suddenly realized who he was. She'd occasionally seen him on talk shows, an eccentric and often excited presence, gesturing and talking about aliens.
Gnome, first I'd like to introduce you to Skip Kelly. Skip worked at the Santa Fe Archaeological Institute as a curator of their artifact collections.
Baton looked at Skip with narrowed eyes, but before he could say anything, Skip burst out,
I'm so pleased to meet you, Dr. Baton. I loved your book on SETI. Really loved it. I thought you laid out a most impressive body of evidence that the Earth is currently under alien surveillance.
This was exactly the right thing to say, and Baton's critical gaze vanished as his face lit up with delight.
Thank you, Skip.
Tappan introduced Nora to Baton and asked her if she had any questions.
I'm sorry, I haven't read your book myself, Nora began.
Baton held up his hand, rose from his chair, and removed a book from a shelf. He placed it on his desk, flipped it open, scribbled a note, closed it, and handed it to her.
Now that's taken care of,
he said. Thank you, Nora said. It was entitled The Second Revelation, with a cover depicting the Cat's Eye Nebula.
I have a few questions, if I may.
She was going to be as nice as possible to the man who'd be Skip's boss, but she still needed some answers.
Of course.
Where do you think the UFO, that is, the UAP, came from?
Something that large would be hard to accelerate to close to light speed. So it was probably from a nearby star system. But in a larger sense, that's not important.
Why not?
Because I believe that a galaxy-wide civilization has already been established and is keeping tabs on us. The government, of course, has thoroughly covered it up.
Why haven't these aliens revealed themselves to us? She asked.
They know how disruptive it would be to human culture. We've seen this in our own world. When an indigenous people come in contact with technologically advanced Western society, their own culture is almost inevitably destroyed. So, you're saying we're sort of like a primitive tribe, living in a nature preserve, protected from contact with the outside world,
said Skip.
Exactly, said Baton.
My next question, Nora said, is why did the government give you a permit to excavate? It's federal land, and you got a federal permit. If the government was trying to cover it up, why let you dig? It doesn't make sense.
At this, Baton turned to Tappan.
That's in your court. This is BLM land, which is under the Department of the Interior. I got the permit directly from the Secretary of the Interior, who happens to be an old friend of mine. Years ago, between high school and college, we met as rafting guides in the Grand Canyon. He was my sternman. That's like being war buddies. You really get to know your fellow boatmen. Anyway, when I first applied for the permit, there was some pushback out of left field, and then it was suddenly dropped. Interior went ahead with the permit with, I might add, the backing of the president. I'm also in the wind power business, and we're involved with Interior on some of our larger projects. So, yes, I got the permit through the help of some very powerful connections.
Tappan shook his head.
We never could figure out where those objections came from, but I'd guess there are some people deep in the Pentagon unhappy about what we're doing. They withdrew their pressure before drawing attention to themselves.
Yes, said Baton. And that's why I showed Lucas how to check his car for explosive devices.
He laughed loudly at his joke.
Do you have any other questions?
Just one more. If these aliens had the advanced technological capability of interstellar travel, how is it that they stupidly crashed their spaceship?
Baton looked at her a long time.
I've asked myself that too.
There was a long silence.
Well? Nora asked.
He gave a little smile.
The only answer I can come up with is that even aliens make mistakes.
Nora had the sudden, distinct feeling that Baton was not being straight in his answer, that he had another theory, one he didn't wish to share.
I know why,
Skip said out of the blue. All eyes turned to him.
Those alien pilots just can't hold their liquor.
There was a moment in which nobody spoke. And then, suddenly, the room erupted in laughter. Skip grinned, obviously pleased with himself. Already, Nora thought, he looked at home here.